Coming up, actress Heather Matarazzo joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ileana Douglas. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. Hi, Tamara Berg.
Hi.
My lovely co-host.
How are you?
I'm good. We've got a great show. Heather Matarazzo is here. Thrilled to be talking to her. And she's interested in women in writing and women's issues. And yesterday we had our big international Women's Day. Almost better than Valentine's Day. Did you do anything special?
I think so, too. Ate candy.
Yes, I ate ice cream in my pajamas and didn't feel guilty about it because
right.
I'm a woman.
Exactly.
W-O-M-A-N.
But back today to the other 364 days a year,
yeah.
As my buddy Steve Mazan, the comedian, says. Sorry about that, ladies.
I thought it was... today is International Meatball Day, so I'm taking some, my IKEA show. We featured meatballs, so I could sort of horn in on that one, too.
Absolutely. I can get behind that.
I had a lot of... It was weird. Like, I woke up, and I posted something
yes.
about my grandmother, Helen
yes.
Gahagan Douglas, who was a congresswoman, a lovely quote, that saying that the best advice she ever gave me was to keep learning. And I was very excited about that. But I got all sorts of snarky texts from male friends of mine.
Did you?
Oh, I thought you're not supposed to tweet. You're not supposed to be working. And, if I answered the phone, I thought you're supposed to be taking the day off. So why guys couldn't handle one day dedicated to women? They freaked out.
They did freak out. I had... let me think if I can tell this story. I had someone on Facebook challenge me because all I wrote was, I'm not even going to say that, but some people can hear some things that I say and some people cannot hear things that I say on Facebook, because
yes.
we have groups and things like that.
Yes.
So when my post for Women's Day was relatively benign, like most mm-hmm. of the things I do on Facebook. And I just said, something about thanking the women who walked the path before us, you mm-hmm. know, and one of my friends who's, I'm just going to say less enlightened.
Yes.
That's my perspective, of course. Was like, no, don't tell me you did that. And I was like, did what? And I think what he was objecting to was that I did the Walk for Women in January, the day after.
Yeah, but what is that, Brian?
And right, I know. But and then he talked all about how we're a team and real men love women. And it was
men have no, as witnessed by today, first thing in the morning.
Yes.
I wake up and
hi, John.
Except for John.
John.
John's one of the good ones.
Yes, he is.
But I wake up today and all over the internet is people posting that Hillary Clinton has a new hairdo. And I'm like, wow, that day yesterday.
It was over at midnight.
Dedicated to, Mary Pickford, who basically, started United Artists.
Yes, she did.
Motion Picture Home for older actors. And I've talked about my, grandmother, politician, and people, Ava DuVernay, we're having this real moment of empowerment. And then literally the next day is like, did you see Hillary's new hair? It's like, let's get it in perspective, what's important, women. You're how you look. Let's get back to objectifying you.
Yes.
Don't care about
exactly.
your accomplishments.
Exactly.
Do you feel that pressure? I mean, I feel a pressure to always... look good, like that looking good
yeah.
is just as important as doing a good job.
Absolutely.
And I feel that pressure every day.
Well, and not just looking good, but looking societally acceptable. Because like what I think looks good might be a little different from what
yeah.
society expects.
I wish I could be like a 40-year-old, guy wearing a hoodie. Because that's how professional men dress. They get to wear, tennis sneakers and a hoodie. But when women do that, they get called out for trying to look.
Poor John is on the sofa right now, just like.
I'm not bitter.
Would you like it in.
No, Ileana. The last thing we can say about Ileana is that she's bitter. John, would you like to weigh in?
No!
As the male voice?
You know, I'm sorry.
A male voice.
I wasn't listening because you guys are talking.
That's right.
You girls, you ladies.
Right. Let me know when you're done.
How's my hair today?
Right, exactly.
But hey, didn't you think, I thought there was, and I thought it was so interesting with Hillary. I said, oh, here it comes. America, where they're like the ex-boyfriend that wants you back.
Right.
You know, now all of a sudden it's like, you know, I'm kind of tired of Trump. Like, Hillary's looking, did you see her new hairdo? She wasn't so bad. Maybe I'll call her up. Maybe she'll go out with me again.
Well, speaking of the president, did you see what happened with him on Twitter yesterday about his tweet about International Women's Day?
No, I don't.
It was just he talked about, of course, nobody respects women more than he does, I think was essentially the wording of the tweet, to which many people replied direct quotes of things that he's said about women. And it was, let's just say, contrary to that statement that he made.
Yes.
And entertaining.
Be interesting to see his taste in movies. I once looked him up, and he's a fan of the film Goodfellas.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was interesting. I don't know what other movie taste he has, but I always think it's very telling what movies that people like. Yeah. Anyway, it's great. I think that it's 2016 sort of cracked the lid for women in film and filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I think that the best thing that happened is that women just don't care anymore. I don't care anymore.
Right.
I just don't care if people are offended.
Right.
You know, I'm much more on alert. I'm not having to be as nice right off the bat. I'm just listening to people and not being, I hate to use the word like not uncooperative, but I'm just listening to what men say and stopping them immediately when they say something that's stupid and sexist.
Or inappropriate, yeah.
Well, you know, they. Yeah. For instance, I was in a business meeting and I was talking about a project and one of the executives said to me, he said, boy, you were really lucky to get to him. And I said, no, actually, I wasn't lucky. I've been working on this for 20 years. It's not lucky. It's not luck. But that's something that I believe that it's like going to the doctor. Like, literally, if you don't say something, you've got to set the boundaries, right up the top. Not being mean about it,
right,
but just because I was always, oh, the way to get something done is to be very nice and very compliant and do lots of work. And then what happens is that people say, thank you very much, and then they push you aside. So
that's right.
The new working woman, I believe, is much more... circumspect about, what am I going to do? What will I get paid? All of those things.
Yeah. Well, and do you also think the changing of the tide has anything to do with age? Because I have the belief that, as we get older, while, people in general, but especially women, are more marginalized as they get older, they also care less about what people think.
I think my personal feeling, and then I want to get to Heather because she's interested
in
these things. But I truly believe that it was economical, that there was literally no roles by 2015.
Acting roles, you mean? Yes.
No, there's no women in the industry. You know, of the reason that we wanted to do Trailblazing Women, the series for TCM, is that women were simply marginalized in acting roles to, they're the neighbor, they're the crabby ex-wife. Mm-hmm. And it was like we were just being marginalized literally out of show business.
Yes.
And I think that what truly made people get fed up, what made me get fed up is like, I need to make some money here, So when you're at the point where you don't care anymore and you literally just need to go out and work and get a job, I think you start speaking up a little bit more. Yeah. And I think that we have made that crack. Ava DuVernay now, making this film, $100 million. And so it's like we have pushed the door open a little bit. economically. To me, that's the most important thing. People of note, actresses of note, spoke out about wage disparity.
Yes, they did.
And we still have wage disparity.
Yes, we do.
But I don't feel that there's going to be the repercussions as much for actually saying out loud, hey, why is he getting paid twice as much for this? Or being able to ask before you go into a negotiation what you're going to get. Yeah. But that's what I think. I think it's economic.
Well, and that's where the power comes from. That's where the power is. And, you know, hopefully that women being able to have their own lives at stake will be coming from a place of power now, too, where they haven't before.
Yeah.
I feel very hopeful. Let's bring in
Heather. Yes. I'm so excited to have Heather here. Of course, she made her debut in Welcome to the Dollhouse, won an Independent Spirit Award for that. I think that's the first time I met her. Of course, was in the Princess Diary films, the sequel. She was also in The Devil's Advocate, numerous television shows like Grey's Anatomy, Law and Order, Roseanne, the L Word, of course, and has been a staple in the indie film scene. Welcome, Heather Matarazzo.
Hi.
How long have we known each other?
So long.
Oh my God, so long.
Like 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, you made such an auspicious, of course, debut. That was kind of always my fantasy of just being in one movie, you know, like one or two, you know, like Jeannie Berlin she was in this movie called The Heartbreak Kid, or Barbara Harris. You follow like a great tradition of people that their first film is like crazy good and like, who is this person? Where did they come from? And so I think that with Welcome to the Dollhouse, you certainly did that. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
And now we always start the show. My favorite question, do you remember the first film that you saw and who took you to see it?
The first film I saw in theaters was Batman.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was Batman. I was probably about like 8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now this is Batman with Michael Keaton.
Yeah. The original Batman, around 8 years old. It was the first time I had ever been in a movie theater. And I remember that I was eating popcorn. Uh-huh. It was over the summer. And I remember getting sick. And I vomited everywhere.
In the theater?
In the theater. Like, in the row.
Oh.
And my mom was going to take me home because she had taken me to see it. And I said, no, I want to stay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stay and finish watching this. Yeah.
Did you have any, did it feel traumatic or were you?
No. I mean, I've always loved movies.
Mm-hmm.
Always, always, always. So it didn't matter to me that I felt sick.
Mm-hmm.
It was more important to me that I got to stay and watch,
mm-hmm.
you know, because movies always made me feel better.
Right. In what way did they make you feel better? Because they made me feel better. I used to pretend people in the movies were my friend.
Yeah. I mean, this is...
And then, until they became my friend.
And then you were like, no, I like the illusion better.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't want to meet Marlon Brando. That's what I wrote about. I was like, I can't even look. I'll probably turn to stone. I mean, I had posters of him in my room, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they made you feel better.
I mean, I look at it now and I'm grateful that I've gotten to find the language. You know, at the end of the day, we're storytellers and we go to the movies to see ourselves. We don't go to see famous movie stars. It's why we go to the movies. And there is an energetic transference that happens where we identify with the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I can't identify with a 12-year-old boy fighting aliens on a foreign planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a boy. I've never been to a foreign planet. I've never met an alien that I know of. However, I can identify with the feeling of loss. I can identify with the feeling of fear. I can identify with the feeling of longing and aloneness. And so there's that silent, conscious or unconscious, I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not alone. And that's why I love film so much and I love getting to be a storyteller. You know, I like movies have saved my life in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, I really don't like actors when they're like, well, it's not like, well, you know, it's not like we're curing cancer or anything. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
However, you definitely helped me get out of bed. Mm-hmm. You definitely inspired me to take an action that I otherwise wouldn't have taken. I remember seeing Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, have you been to the Cinema Society screenings?
Where are they?
In New York.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been to so many.
Yeah, I know.
Alt art houses that maybe I have.
So,
but I know the film. I'm aware of the film.
And I remember, like, I went to, like, the premiere of it, and I had no idea what to expect. I hadn't read the book. And by the end of the film, I am ugly, sobbing, and I can't leave my seat. And as always, there's an after party, and I remember saying to the head of the Cinema Society, listen, I can't stay for this after party. I need to go home and eat my feelings. And then I called my girlfriend from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, listen, regardless of what transpired between us, you know, thank you for that time.
Mm-hmm.
That film inspired me to take that action.
Wow.
You know, it's we're the architects, we're the builders, mm-hmm. you know. I feel like we have such a not only responsibility, but it's such a privilege and an honor,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we get to a certain degree, give people back to themselves.
Well, didn't you sort of feel that Welcome to the Dollhouse had that quality, or when it came out, were you?
Oh, I was so unaware.
Yeah, it took me years to be aware of, again, film performance. I was like, I was thrilled to be working, you know, but then after a while, like you sit back. But I mean, again, when that movie came out, you know, it really celebrated being different. And I thought the character is so courageous. And were you aware was that similar to your upbringing when being put on film, or were you being directed in that sense?
No, I mean, for me, people have asked me, and I'm sure they've asked you too, you know, well, how do you do what you do? How do you act? And mm-hmm. the truth is that I've always just read a script, and I'm very visual, so I can see it, I can feel it. And if I connect with a character, I connect with a character. I don't know how that happens. I don't know why that happens. I just do.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of Dollhouse, I had said that it was really a PG version of what goes on in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And though there were similarities to a certain degree between Don and I, with that too, Todd is such a great writer, and he is such a great storyteller, and he gave me a lot of room to just be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really do believe that we didn't really have any rehearsals. We just went and did it.
Was it very low budget?
It was $1 million, so.
That's low budget.
It's low budget.
and you shot it in New Jersey.
We shot it in West Caldwell, New Jersey, mm-hmm. The summer of 1994, so I was 11.
God, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought, one of my favorite parts of the movie, because I really related to it, was the idea that you have this crush on this older guy.
Yeah.
I thought that that was so true. Because I was a nerdy kid in high school. Nobody would give me a second look. And, you know, and then like somebody who's older, who can see beyond who you are, you know, kind of they take a liking to you, you know. And it, if not for people like that, you know, they give you some spark. But then it turns into this, you know, that you believe. It's so mortifying and
yeah,
such a grown-up moment.
Yeah, well, because there's still such a huge naivete.
Yeah.
There's still such a huge naivete, you know. I mean, even simply that visual of her looking at her fingers after she's told, like, we finger fucked once last spring, that's it. And just, how do you, finger fucking, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
And so there is a sweetness and an innocence to it. And with that, too, getting to see the domino effect of what it is to be bullied, because we get to see that Dawn isn't just a quote-unquote victim.
Right.
And I never looked at her as a victim. because we get to see her getting bullied and then cut to she's walking down the street and then she like smacks that kid's ball right out of his hands.
Yeah.
You know, she isn't meek, mm-hmm. fragile. You know, she's tough. She's a tough broad.
I agree, because years later, you know, it sort of, again, creates an archetype for certain types of movies. Napoleon Dynamite mm-hmm. seems to fall into that.
Yeah, Little Miss Sunshine.
Little Miss Sunshine.
Freaks and Geeks.
Also, to a certain extent, but it's a much softer movie, is Juno, which is like then things start to get like, well, that's kind of not, you know.
Yeah.
She's almost like, we started to go too far. Like, mm-hmm. I like the person better when they had a little bit of rough edges.
Yeah.
You know, because it felt more like us. So in terms of then seeing yourself, and what did your family think when you were in this movie? I mean, did you have any idea that it would create the splash that it
Absolutely
did?
Absolutely not.
You just thought it was a small...
I mean, I didn't think. I started working when I was 7. Mm-hmm. And I just love to work. I've always loved being an actor. I've always loved the process of storytelling. So my aim and my goal was never to, like, be quote-unquote famous. It really was just... I love getting to tell stories, and I love getting to act. I don't know if it chose me or I chose it, mm-hmm. you know, but, and it's hard to explain to individuals that aren't in line with their purpose mm-hmm. or have been too fearful or have been taught or raised to believe that, you know, you work 9 to 5, punch mm-hmm. in, punch out, you go home, and I really do believe that, like, the universe was like, this kid needs, she needs to be aligned and aligned quick, you know, which I'm very grateful for. It really did, you know, save my life.
And were you aware of anyone else auditioning for the part?
Or I had originally auditioned for another role, and then they had... I remember I was doing The Miracle Worker mm-hmm. in Jiva Theater up in Rochester, New York, and I was there from February until May. Mm-hmm. And then the day after I got back from Rochester, I had the audition for Welcome to the Dollhouse for a character that ended up getting cut. And they asked me to come back the next day to audition for Dawn. Mm-hmm. And then I came back, and then they asked me to come back again. I came back, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all very serendipitous, and I'm continually in awe of how my life continues to fall into place.
Right. And they, we were talking about this before, I personally, just as an audience, was very disappointed when they made the sequel and they put another actress. I was like, what? That doesn't seem fair. And again, in terms of the fans, you know, I'm just speaking personally. It's nothing against the other actress, but and she's a wonderful actress. Mm-hmm. But it's just that when an actor literally creates a role, creates the look, et cetera, mm-hmm. and then somebody steps in and is basically just copying what you did. Did you have any forewarning that that was going to happen?
I found out via Twitter.
Oh, well, that's... not good.
Fantastic.
I had found
That's
out.
Sad.
I had found out via Twitter. You know, I really do believe. I don't think that I can say on one hand I believe that everything happens for a reason, but mm-hmm. then have exceptions.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm. And so originally, and this was probably when I was like 19, when Todd was doing Palindromes. Mm-hmm. He wanted me to play one of the Avivas. Mm-hmm. And I read it and I was like, wow, I don't know if mm-hmm. I can do this at this time in my life, you mm-hmm. know? And then I had this intuitive thought. He wants to bring me back for Don Wiener. Mm-hmm. I had an intuitive thought and I was correct. I was mm-hmm. correct. And And he wanted her, he was going to have her be like a domestic terrorist that blew herself up in front of a Banana Republic.
Uh-huh.
And for me, I didn't want to do that. I didn't agree with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Partially, A, because at the time, being 19, 20 years old, I was just starting to discover, you know, myself as like a young woman, mm-hmm. you know, wanting to carve my own niche and transition out of that box that I had been put in. And on top of that, I felt like it would completely destroy Dollhouse in the sense of I love that the last image that you see of her is on the bus singing.
Yeah.
Even though she's sitting by herself, not only is she going on the trip, mm-hmm. but she's participating.
Mm-hmm.
So there is such a hope. There's an open-endedness that I think is so beautiful and so wonderful. And so I had said no, and he had gotten very upset about it. And I don't know that I did it in the most gracious way, but mm-hmm. I did it as graciously as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old young woman could that wasn't really comfortable with confrontation or saying no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I reacted more than I responded.
Mm-hmm.
So then cut to when Wiener Dog was underway, and I found out about it via Twitter, of course. I'd be a fucking liar if I was like, no, it's totally fine. Like, everything was totally great. My ego was very hurt. My ego is very, very bruised. And with that, too, you know, that was it. It was just my ego. Mm-hmm. I love Dawn, and I love that my memory of her is on that bus.
Right.
You know, and a few months later, I had seen Todd at the Cine Family Theater because they were doing a 20-year retrospective of Dollhouse that I was invited to as well. And sitting on the dais, and they'd asked him about recasting, and he said that when I had said no originally, I had given him permission to then recast and have each incarnation of his character be played by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said that he felt an incredible, incredible amount of freedom. And, you know, yes, he wrote it and he directed it, you know, but with that too, I do share ownership with her because I did bring her to life.
Yeah.
You know, and with that too, it's like sharing custody of a child.
Definitely.
I would imagine.
Well, it's an iconic, you know, kind of a performance. And did you see the film?
I saw I saw a little bit of it. Yeah. It's really strange. I'm not a fan of watching myself, period.
That's so interesting. You're not?
I
love watching myself.
I don't like it at all. And I feel like, you know, a good 15 or 20 years has to pass before I'm able to.
Right.
To see it and watch without judgment, and I'm mm-hmm. able to watch it with love, and I'm able to watch it with empathy and with compassion.
See, it's interesting because if you start directing, and I, you know, was directing my shorts and then my web series, you know, you have to, you watch yourself endlessly.
Yeah.
And it's just, I always go, when she goes there, and you know, you just, it becomes second nature. You go, when she picks the cup up, it's always shocking to me that I'm able to just go, oh, well, that was, well, when she does that, well, when she walks.
Yeah.
Because it just seems so weird. Like, when I walk to the door and I open it, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, for sure. There's definitely a separation that happens. And I directed something back in 2014, and that definitely is my trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, too, I don't necessarily want to be in the things that I direct.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. And B, there is a detachment that does get to happen
mm-hmm.
where, because I'm not the character that I'm playing.
Yeah.
You know, so there is, I think it's interesting with certain creatives, and you definitely seem to have what I have in the sense of getting to be able to compartmentalize when necessary,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then also be inclusive with everything when necessary.
So then you get into, which is interesting, then you also recreate, you know, had to, because you're doing the sequel of Princess Diaries, you did have the opportunity mm-hmm. to be in a movie mm-hmm. that's very successful, mm-hmm. another dream of mine to be in something that was a sequel, and working with the great Gary Marshall. I mean, I don't know if you can sum up, like, what did you learn from Gary Marshall, but just, I just mm-hmm. seems like literally the nicest. I auditioned for him like 80 times and I've never gotten in a movie of his. And it became like a joke. He and Harold Ramis are the two people I got to the point where I was like, I'm just not going to try anymore.
Yeah, like what gives?
But I'm here.
Yeah.
One time I auditioned for Gary Marshall and Jack Klugman was literally sitting watching my audition. I was like, well, that's not uncomfortable or strange.
Wow.
And he said, he had to know his voice. He goes, don't just bend that, don't bite me. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, I can't even concentrate.
What were you auditioning for?
It was the movie. That was the movie. Well, I've auditioned for so many, but that was the one with Greg Kinnear where he was a postman.
Oh, right, right, right. Like right, a mailman. Right.
But it just, but anyway, I love the experience. I used to, the last time I was like, I love auditioning for you. I know yeah. you're never going to use me, but yeah. thank you very much.
Yeah.
But so you got to work with him, which was always my dream. I love him and I thought so fondly of him from Lost in America. One of the great, great comedy yeah. on screen performances. But I just, tell me, what was he like as a director?
I mean, he's absolutely, absolutely incredible. You know, they always say that hindsight is 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 17 when I first started doing Princess Diaries. And I you know, at the time, like, smoking camels and, you know, thought of myself as like a New York actor, like the female Sean Penn. Until I found out that he, like, beat Madonna with a bat. And I was like, no, got to get rid of that. but just that I'm, like, a real fucking actor.
Right.
Like, and you know, I'll do this Disney movie, but, like, you know, I'm still legit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going mainstream. Whatever yeah. the fuck that means. I was such a little fucker. But anyway, I mean, I remember that Gary was just so generous and was always about the funny, mm-hmm. you know, and not about the schmacting. Mm-hmm. And he was all about just being authentic and honest. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the things that he told me, he was like, props are your friend. Props are your friend. And so in that film, like, you'll see me. I always have a prop in my hand. I always right. have something. I'm always doing some kind of business, mm-hmm. not to distract, but there was, and I don't think a lot of comedy directors understand this, mm-hmm. but he did in spades. That it's funny when you're not trying to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the funniness is in the moment. You know?
Had you been funny before? I mean, I you're quirky funny in Welcome to the Dollhouse, but this is now like where you have to actually deliver.
Yeah, I mean, I done Roseanne, mm-hmm. Which was a surreal experience in itself.
Was that your first, like, working on live television?
No, I had done Townies, and how I got on Roseanne
uh-huh.
was that, so Marcy Werner... Marcy Carsey, Tom Werner.
Mm-hmm.
I had had a meeting with them in L.A., and they gave me the opportunity to do Townies, which was ended up being a failed series with Molly Ringwald and Jenna Elfman and Lauren Graham and what the fuck is his name? Can't think of his name. But Eric McCormick played my dad, and
it sounds like a good show.
I know.
Yeah. And. Pamela Fryman was directing, and the Radford studio lot. So at the time, like, Sybil was shooting there, Seinfeld mm-hmm. was shooting there, Third yes. Rock from the Sun, Grapes Under Fire, The Single Guy, and...
Mentioned two shows I was in, okay. But thank you.
And then...
Dude.
And then Roseanne.
Yeah.
And my goal from the time I was like a kid, I loved Roseanne. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved Roseanne. It's like, I'm going to be on her show. I'm going to be on her show. And so I remember I'd snuck on to the soundstage and I had gotten kicked off by security. Like, I would have like my like cup of ramen soup that I would just eat and mm-hmm. walk, and it's like Disneyland. And I was like, no, I'm gonna get on this show. So I snuck back on the next day, and the stage manager saw me and was like, oh my God, I love you. I'm sure she would love to meet you, but today's not a good day. Come back mm-hmm. tomorrow. Okay. So I go back the next day. Today's not a good day. Come back tomorrow. Okay. Go back the next day. Today's not a good day. And I'm like, this is like that person maybe that's trying to be very kind,
right.
but doesn't know how to say,
don't come back tomorrow.
Scram, kid, you're bothering me. And so I was like, no, I had again like that intuitive hit. And I was like, just go one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in, and the soundstage felt like the length of a football field. And all of a sudden I hear, hey, you. And it was like everybody scattered like cockroaches.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you. And I'm turning around, looking over my shoulder like it couldn't be me. And then, me? Yeah, you. What the fuck are you doing here? And I was like, I want you to be on my show. I love you. I was like, great, I'm here doing townies. Why the fuck are you on that piece of shit? Like, and brings over her producer and is like, I want her on the show. What kind of character do you want to play? And I was like, I want to play a strong, independent woman that, you know, has a tumultuous past or, like, family history, whatever the hell it was. And she was like, great. And then, yeah, like, I ended up doing, like, 5 episodes of the last season.
Wow.
You know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw it in your bio, but I, you know, I wasn't aware. That was such a great show.
Yeah, and then I did All I Want to Do, which was a female comedy that was set in, like, the 1960s that was mm-hmm. directed by Sarah Kernochin.
That sounds like a good show, too.
Yeah, it was, like, me.
Well, I was working in the 90s, so maybe that's my excuse.
It was great.
I missed all these.
It was great. So I had, like, a nice variety, but Gary was probably like top 3.
Yeah.
You know, probably number 1 still.
Now, let me ask you this, because you are the supporting lead. You're is it okay to call you the funny friend? I was the funny friend until I couldn't. I sort of had my moment, like with Todd, where, you know, a director wanted me to play a funny friend, and I was like, I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
My funny friend card is
done.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's because my experience is it's great, and mm-hmm. the movie comes out, and everybody loves you. Mm-hmm. But on the set, mm-hmm. I was called upon to really support the lead mm-hmm. to the point of almost exhaustion.
Mm.
Like, you're off camera mm-hmm. 90% of the time, mm-hmm. making sure that they look great. Mm-hmm. And did you have any of that same experience?
I didn't.
So it was just me. No, I'm
kidding. No, I mean,
only you.
You know, because for me it was, you give what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And Annie, that was like her first big film.
Mm-hmm.
So she was raring to go
mm-hmm.
and was incredibly, incredibly professional. And
Anne Hathaway is what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
Anne Hathaway. Sorry. And so for me, especially when I was younger, it was, are you going to be able to hold what I'm giving you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sense of like, are you going to be able to meet me? Are you going to be able to match me? And there was like that instinctive kind of challenge of like, are we going to fucking dance
mm-hmm.
or is this going to be bullshit? And she was like, yeah, let's dance. So we then were given and afforded the opportunity to really play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so wonderful. In general, when you feel not only supported by the director that you're working with, but by your co-star, You know, so I was very fortunate in that regard.
I think it's, you know, again, my own internal feeling of like, then the movie comes out mm-hmm. and you see the stars zoom ahead mm-hmm. and you get offered, you know, another quirky friend. Mm-hmm. And as you're growing into a woman, mm-hmm. you're like, I'm not the funny friend in real life, though. And so, again, did you have any... you know, for me, it's like a childhood thing. It's mm-hmm. like, for once, I'd like to just be the popular one as opposed to the funny one.
Yeah.
Funny, the class clown. But the class clown was the only... And then I was like, all right, I'm back doing class clown because that's yeah. the only thing I can do.
Yeah.
You know, after turning down a bunch of funny friends, I was yeah. like, I think I need to pay the rent. Does anyone yeah. want a funny friend?
Yeah. I mean, I look at it this way. This has just been my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And this, I think that there are so many different components that make us who we are, right? And like when I did Dollhouse, I didn't know what ugly meant. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. I just looked at people and I thought that they were beautiful. You know, I didn't, and I definitely never ascribed myself to thinking that like you're ugly. And so after that experience, you know, when I would have reporters say to me, what does it feel like to play the ugly girl? What I would hear is, how does it feel to be the ugly girl?
Mm-hmm.
And then I hated that word quirky because I thought that was just a nice way of saying ugly.
Well, I think it is. I yeah, mean, that's, but, I always make but, a joke about it.
But here's the thing.
Or ethnic. You know, it means a lot of things.
But... I subscribed for so long to believing what others were saying, mm-hmm. even if I intuitively felt that it wasn't true. And so I went through a period in my late teens, early 20s, when I fought against it. You're not seeing me, you're not seeing me, you're not seeing me. But underneath it, though, was... the biggest fear, and I think that's true for every single human being, that our greatest desire is to truly be seen, and it's also our greatest fear. Because mm-hmm. the fear is, if you actually truly see me, that, and you go and you run, if you actually truly see me, I'm going to find out like the biggest truth that I've been wanting to avoid, which is that like, oh my God, I am an ugly, disgusting piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we avoid, because we don't want it to be true. And so anyway, I had to go through my own personal transformation in, like, my mid to late 20s where I wasn't really working and I felt like the universe was like, you've been playing people your whole entire life, now go become one.
Mm-hmm.
Actually just become a person. I was like, what's that? What does that mean? And I had to go through the experience, and this is what I really found out within like the last year has afforded me a lot of opportunities to change, which is that I am not powerless. I'm not. There is something really powerful in getting to say no,
mm-hmm.
but there's a very big difference between commanding and demanding, and I had to really actually see the truth about not only who I was, but what I really desired. And I got to see that, and I feel like this is true for women in general, but especially women in this industry, where power is looked upon as something that's negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially owning one's power and being in one's power. Pardon me. And I found that there's pleasure in the power and there's power in the pleasure. And I was raised Roman Catholic,
mm-hmm.
which means that like pleasure in any kind of form is a sin.
That's true.
You know, it has to be very modulated, well, and very...
It's a, your, what I was always taught was your rewards will be great in heaven.
Yes. Exactly. Just like hold on.
And here you pay yeah. penance until yeah. then.
And with
here
that
we
too,
suffer.
And with that too, though, it's you've got to be a good girl. you know, you've got to be a good girl and then God will hear your prayers. Maybe, maybe. Mm-hmm. So there's all these conditions that you have to meet. And the point of all of this is that I was so frustrated and I was so angry and I felt so incredibly powerless that fine, I did it every which way. Like, I'll go in for the audition that I don't want to go in for that really makes me feel like I want to kill myself because this doesn't intuitively line up with me. Mm-hmm. And I will say no because I just am frustrated and I can't deal with it. And then I would get, you know, ragged on by my agents about it. Mm-hmm.
In what way? Well, like, what, for not being cooperative?
Yeah, this is an opportunity and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And what I discovered, especially this last year, is that I'm no longer a size 2. I'm a size 6. Mm-hmm. That's it. I've grown into a size 6. And I don't know about you, but when I try to put on pants that are way too small for me, A, they don't come above my thighs, and it's ridiculous. So imagine doing that in public, you know, for a casting director. Where it's, I know I'm not right for this.
Right.
And it is going to show. It is going to show. And because it's not who I am anymore. Just energetically, it's not who I am. You know, I know that, like, I am a stunning, beautiful woman. Like, I know that. That's not a hope. That's not a positive affirmation. Mm-hmm. I know that to be true. And with that too, then I don't need anybody's permission anymore. You know, I don't need to be seen because I already see myself. So in terms of then changing the narrative, mm-hmm. my agents are no longer in control of that. I am. You know, I didn't like the character description, you know, for how other people saw me. And I thought I was powerless to change it. And I just had to kind of go along to get along. And then I was like, fuck it. No, I'm actually the writer of the script. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to change this character description, you know, to reflect who I am today and to reflect who I am now and to reflect into the woman I'm becoming. Mm-hmm. And because I think of something like Venus de Milo, right? Like a Botticelli painting, where at one time, women that were voluptuous, women that were a size 10 or a 12 or a 14 or a 16 were considered stunning. They were sexy as fuck. Mm-hmm. You know, cutting
ideal.
To... Ideal. The ideal continually shifts. And the truth is, the version that you have of your ideal is your business. It's not mine. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know what I'm capable of. I know how I serve. I know the gifts I've been given in terms of my talent. And I don't think that the universe is so cruel to let them go to waste. And with that, though, I had to hit this kind of bottom and then get really fucking angry and come face to face with these limitations and beliefs that I had that were no longer serving me and were keeping me small in order to then break free of them and really create change. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, one of the things I was reading, which I thought was very brave, was this idea of, you know, that, which I'm first of all curious, like, how did it even come across to you that somebody said that you weren't fuckable enough to get a part? Like, who told you that?
A director.
I mean, but why would you tell somebody that?
Because
that's all of our worst fears anyway. So
I've had it too. So, the direct quote.
Oh God.
Not fuckable enough.
Yeah, just not fuckable. Mm-hmm. And I was 19.
So somebody says that to you, and that's mm-hmm. why you don't get a part in a movie.
Yeah, after I'd been attached to play that role for over 2 years. And then the producers came along, you know, that were the money people, mm-hmm. you know, like the sleazy haired gizmo. And we're like, yeah, she's not fuckable. You want someone who's fuckable. And so after spending all of that time getting other casts attached because of my name at the time.
Right.
To be told that was devastating. I was devastated. Absolutely, absolutely devastated. And he wasn't originally going to tell me, but I knew something was wrong. I knew something was up.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what's going on? They're going to give the part to someone else. Why? Well, why? They said you're not fuckable. But there's this other part that right now is really, really small, but we're going to build it out for you.
Right.
She's really funny.
Quirky. She's quirky.
Quirky.
You know, and so with that, you know, like at the time, I was like, I'm going to bite the bullet and I'm going to do it. Because again, the good girl, being nice, being amenable.
Well, you also have to pay the rent.
Have to pay the rent. But here's the thing too, right? So this past year, I started my Patreon account. I'm producing my podcast that I'm just starting. And I thought for so long that my my finances were always going to be tied up with being an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have to maintain this illusion, you know, and I say this all the time, that the ego is so expensive, that you have to maintain this illusion that because you are quote unquote famous or well known, A, you must be well off. B, you can't tell anybody otherwise. You can't tell the truth, because that is parting the curtain to reveal that the great and powerful Oz is no more than a little man.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid you actually bring a reality to who you are and what you do as an actor. And I got to the point where I was like, fuck it. Like, the ego is way too expensive. And I'm not going to be held hostage by that. Like, yes, my bills have to get paid. And so, you know what? Like, I've said yes to things that are atrocious, especially in the last few years, with the exception of this movie that I just did in September called Stuck. Which is like my first lead in 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was directed by a woman, produced by a woman, co-written by a woman. It's an incredible, incredible fucking film. But I've definitely said yes to things because, yeah, I do need to pay the bills. So that idea then of artistic integrity, you know, I'd spent so long building a great resume and being really selective in the projects that I did, because I always wanted to be... I knew that like spending $15 to go to the movies was a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that time is also incredibly valuable, and that I wanted to be able to get behind movies that were going to inspire and going to change. And I always say that everybody has at least one striptease on their resume, you know, like they do, or glitter or showgirls, whatever you want to call it. Those showgirls, I think, is like a separate category. Brilliant on its own.
Cult classic.
But
Pluto Nash.
But what I found is that, if somebody like comes at me and is like, man, that movie was a piece of shit. Yeah, it was. But are you going to pay my bills?
No, I know. But that's part of the trajectory. You know, if you look at the history of any film actor,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's the reality.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen, I mean, Jesus, you know, when Joseph Cotton was in this movie, I saw at the drive-in, you know, Motel Hell.
And, yeah.
You know, that's what happens to actresses.
But
whatever happened to Baby Jane, you know?
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. I don't subscribe to that belief anymore. I really do not, because mm-hmm. A, I can't afford it. I absolutely cannot. And B, like I've really found it to be true in my experience that my agents have no power over me anymore. There is such a freedom that I teach and I do like something else on the side. It's not prostitution. you know, that... provides me like I was floating, and then I had a friend that said you should do Patreon, you know, and for a moment I was like, this is kind of humiliating. I feel like Mickey Rooney on like QVC. like, oh my God, this is my biggest nightmare come true. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side, it's people don't see all the work that like we do, you know? And when I hear, Jesus Christ, when I've heard agents say to me like, well, like, you know, like blah, 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 blah. Like you got to audition, you got to. So it's like, I'm not getting paid to audition. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting paid to audition. It actually costs me money to audition, right? So I will happily say yes to things if there is a paycheck involved. However, I need to weigh the pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And really, like, what I found based on my fucking experience is that there, A, is so much more to life. And I know that... I've got so much more to offer, but what I had to do was be willing to take that first step and also get really comfortable with the unknown and get comfortable with the mystery of it and mm-hmm. and staying open, like really staying open to be wowed and not in a frou-frou way, you know, not in a like weird whatever way, but in a very grounded, realistic mm-hmm. way because... you show people how to treat you.
Yeah.
You show people how to treat you. And I'd said, like, I would rather never work again as an actor than audition in this sense. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was continually auditioning just to earn my place in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, I was auditioning to just be able to breathe.
Right.
And that idea of... somebody else saying whether or not I'm worthy of X, Y, and Z. And the truth is that I don't need anybody to say that because I already know that for myself. And I'd written this letter to my agent, this email, and I said, listen, I've been doing this for 30 years. They know who I am. If they don't, they can watch my reel. And if it's for a role that they've seen me play before, I don't need to go in an audition for that. They know what I'm capable of. Now, that's very different than if it was for a role that somebody was like, I don't know if she's right for it. But it was like a drug addicted mother or whatever the fuck, like somebody that's like dying of cancer or schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. Yes, you bet your ass. I will work my ass off and I will go in and I will show you. Like, I will show you. But if it's for something that you've already seen and you already know that I can do.
Right.
And you just want to kind of, like, get your rocks off and waste my time is too valuable to be wasted. And it just means that you're also quite lazy and uh-huh. don't have an imagination. And sorry. No, I've worked too hard and too long. I've been doing it for 30 fucking years.
But if you go, that's how I get people on the podcast, though. Because you know the outer waiting room is... I mean, some of it is just, it's this routine, like pilot season, that you, you know, can or cannot be a part of.
Yeah, but you know.
Like, we're all on the chain gang.
But, like, with that, too, again, I really do find.
No, I admire that, though.
Yeah, because I just. Here's the deal. It's spent so long being like. Do you see me? Do you see me? Do you see me? Do you mm-hmm. see me? Do you see me? And I no longer need to be seen mm-hmm. because it's the, it's like a ghost that's trying to wave someone down.
Right.
Be like, can you see me? Can anybody see me? And now I really do get to be seen in a way that I didn't know, was really like feasible because I was willing to be seen. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? It's yeah. that weird paradox where it's like as soon as I was willing to be seen and I right. was seen and held in love, more mm-hmm. importantly, like held in love and seen like in love and brilliance and every single thing that like I really did know to be true about myself, but then it was validated in that sense. Mm-hmm. I no longer need to have it validated by anyone else. It's like, no, you were right.
Right.
You're right. It's the truth. And once you know the truth sets you free, and I don't need it from anyone anymore. Mm-hmm. So then there is like an equal playing field of Well, now if you want to play, like, yes, let's go play. That'll be so fucking exciting. But yeah, I don't, if, yeah, you don't get it. That's fine.
Well, you'll have, I will look forward. I mean, first of all, you look so young. You don't even, I mean, I can't believe your age.
Yeah. Ageless and timeless.
No, well, you look so young. You can come back. You can come back as a completely, you know, as fantasizing. My fantasy as an actress was always to come back and be a different person.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Not be Ileana Douglas. Like, okay. Dye my hair and be someone new on the scene and have like the total newness. So, but I can't do it because I. But you could actually. You could come. You know. Be,
yeah.
Be some different. Make up a new name for yourself.
And yeah.
Anyway,
like going to your own funeral a little bit.
Well, that's, you know, again, my total fantasy. <But we're... laughs> Anyway, Heather, thank you so much.
Oh my God, thanks for having
for being
me.
Here.
So glad you were here. It was amazing.
Please come back when you have another movie that you're probably going to head into. I can tell you're too smart. You're going to head into directing and writing and directing.
Yeah. You can find Heather on Twitter at Heather Mataraz and her upcoming movie Stuck. Also look for her podcast Shut Up and Listen. The links to all of these projects are on our episodes page of our website, which is ilianaspodcast.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Heather. You can buy Ileana's book, I Blame Dennis Hopper, at Amazon and in bookstores. It's also out on paperback. And check out our Facebook page as well.
And as I always say, as you agree, life is a beginning as a movie. I messed up my own quote. How's that possible?
Start over.
Take two. Everyone's life is a movie. I believe everyone's life is a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And sadly, it's the end of our show. But continued success to you. And it's been it's so fun. Just I remember the first time we met and I hugged you. Welcome. Welcome into the deep water of show business. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.
Every audition I was at, I was like,